Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Lakers Collective 6-game win streak. Wins over the Denver Nuggets, the Houston Rockets. The Lakers are rolling. Is it for real? Are the Lakers contenders? How did they win last night's game? Some of the things we're going to get into on today's show. Happy to see y'all here. If you haven't done so yet, please hit that subscribe button on the Lakers Collective YouTube channel. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, it's nice to have shows after wins. This is much more fun going this route.
What's up, guys? It's good to see you. This year has been such a bizarre year in the sense that we had to be so pessimistic for so long because they were so bad for such an extended stretch against good teams. And then it's like just the exact dramatic opposite of that now. But this is more fun. We get to be more positive. We get to actually have productive conversations surrounding things that make sense this season rather than constantly looking to the big picture. Before we go any further, I just want to say that it's been really cool to watch this team. I loved a quote from Marcus Smart after the game yesterday talking about how he heard everybody talking trash. And he's like, I think it's so cool that this team looked in the mirror and said, hey, we got two directions we can go here. We can either mail it in the rest of the way because we're bad, or like, hey, maybe let's try to make something out of this. And they've tried to make something out of this. And will they win the trophy? I don't know. Probably not. But they're at least trying. And I think that that's an incredibly admirable thing that makes them way more fun to watch, and it keeps the fan base engaged. I just can't say enough of how much I appreciate this recent run from them.
Yeah, talked about it last week, but there were three things I wanted to see coming out of the All-Star break. I wanted them to get healthy, which they largely have right now outside of Maxi Kleber. Everyone's always banged up to a degree, but everyone's relatively healthy. They have been nailing the minutes with the big three, plus 13 net rating post All-Star break. So I was like, can they get to plus six? Can they get to plus eight? Like plus eight would be amazing. They're crushing people with the big three on the floor, including crushing good teams with the big. It wasn't just going back to the Warriors or the Kings or some of these blowouts that they had. No, like they've been winning the minutes against the good teams with the big three. But the final thing was, can they string together some statement wins here against really good opponents? And to beat the Knicks and the Wolves in the decisive fashion that they did, lead the Knicks wire to wire, blow that game open against the Wolves in the third quarter, that was impressive in and of itself. But I also have been impressed by the way that they just beat Denver and Houston, where it's like, okay, those games you maybe faced a little bit of adversity in that first half against Minnesota. You couldn't get a shot to fall in the fourth quarter against New York. You also went cold, but you were in control. Things were going your way to some degree. Against Denver and Houston, they faced real adversity. Denver dominates them in the middle portion of that game. Houston is also dominating them in the middle portion. LA looks to be in control early second. Houston takes over. LA's down 10 almost midway through the third quarter. And then they go on this incredible run to take control of that game and just strangle Houston's offense. And then the Denver game, we'll get into that as well with the overtime heroics. But just winning in the contrast of those two wins, one was a shootout that went to overtime. One was a rock fight that the teams didn't score for three straight minutes in the middle of the fourth. Like, this was the ultimate rock fight that should have favored Houston, but instead it favored the Lakers. So to win a couple close games in two completely different ways, I think is really impressive. And this just is another notch in their belt, so to speak, in terms of they've shown now like four of these six wins have been against top eight or nine teams in the league. And they're absolutely rolling right now, playing their best basketball.
Yeah, and you love to see it. They're doing it in very interesting ways. You mentioned the big three. And last night against the Rockets, the big three, LeBron, Luka, Austin, they were plus 19.2 per 100 in the 24 minutes that they shared the floor in last night's game. They are starting to figure things out with the three of them on the floor. Some of it, I'm sure we'll get into it from our chat questions and everything else, the slotting with LeBron acting as the third guy. It's kind of funny. I noticed on a rewatch of Lakers Rockets, how many times LeBron would get a defensive rebound and turn and find Austin Reeves to give him the ball. I'm like, man, for how many years did we see somebody gets a defensive rebound and it's find LeBron, get the ball to LeBron? It's such a shift now. It's get the ball to Austin Reeves when it's LeBron and Reeves on the floor. The offense is going through Austin, and LeBron is benefiting. Had a great lob dunk. I believe that was in the fourth. Austin was able to throw it from almost half court. And LeBron threw it down. So that shift, I think, has really worked out. It's simplified things for the Lakers, and it's a big credit to LeBron and for his ability to focus on some of the other areas of the game and do what he's doing out there. The three of them are finding rhythm. That's bringing them to another level. I also love the hustle. You know, Jason, a moment ago, you mentioned that Marcus Smart quote. The Lakers were, what was it? They were up 10, I think, with about 40, 30-ish seconds left. And Marcus Smart head first dive after a loose ball. I think some of this, we can get into the three of them playing together, the different little things that they're doing in order to make that happen. But Jason, some of this is also, as you've talked about in the past, they're playing really hard. And that oftentimes makes a big difference.
Yeah, so when we would have conversations surrounding their ability to beat good teams, we would talk about how their half-court offense is great, but they don't have anything else that they do well. Like there wasn't a single other thing that you'd point to, like, oh, they can win a game doing this. Like, they couldn't win a game offensive rebounding like the Houston Rockets. They couldn't win a game by dominating in points off of turnovers like the Oklahoma City Thunder. They didn't have, like, some other punch that they could go to. And one of the most interesting things about this recent 10-game stretch is the Lakers are dominating the margins. They're winning games in a bunch of different ways. They're sixth in defensive rating in this 10-game span, so they can win games with their defense like they did last night. They are winning the points off of turnovers battle substantially over this 10-game stretch. That's tied to their defense, but it's also part of their running habits and the way they've been running the floor. They've been winning in fast break points per game. They've been winning in second chance points per game. It's baffling that a team that had seemingly no interest in trying to win on the margins has made that a huge part of their identity over the course of the last month. I think the guys in the locker room deserve a lot of credit for that. And I think JJ Redick deserves a lot of credit for that. And last night was a perfect example in the sense that the Lakers had a brutally bad half-court offense game relative to the quality of shots that they were getting. Austin Reeves had a rough night. I think Austin is just a little bit of conditioning, a little bit of physical. Like, I think there's a little bit of, like, improvement with his body away from him being able to turn last night's game into an efficient night. Because I actually thought Austin got to his spots fine. He just wasn't finishing when he got there. Like, shots right at the rim that he was smoking or mid-rangers that he was missing. He was missing his wide open threes. As a team, like, Luke Kennard, two wide open threes, missed. Rui Hachimura, two wide open threes, missed. As a team, they generated 14 wide open catch and shoot threes, and they made three of them last night. And it was Marcus Smart that was hitting the threes. So they had a brutally bad half court offense night. Austin didn't have it going. LeBron obviously was struggling a little bit. I do want to come back to Luka there in a second, but they won that game with a strong defensive game plan and getting out in transition off of the turnovers they were forcing and cleaning up some of the messes in the first half. In the first half, I thought they had they weren't scrapping enough on the offensive glass, on the defensive glass, I should say, and a few too many turnovers. But in the second half, they cleaned up their mistakes and they won the game with their defense. The last thing I want to shout out as it pertains to the offense is Houston ends up going small. They take Capella off the floor. They spend the entire tail end of the game just with five perimeter players on the floor. They're switching everything, which obviously makes it a tougher game on guys like Austin and LeBron. And like we talked about, I think Austin is getting closer and closer to figuring that part out, and it, like we just said. But LeBron's 41, so it is what it is. And we can talk about them in the Lakers are contender segment about how that improving will make them better in games like this, you know? But down the stretch, when no one could score and the Rockets were switching, Luka freaking Doncic was able to generate offense. And like Luka, to me, he's been amazing for several weeks now. But what you saw last night is his superpower on full display. In a game where nobody could do shit, literally, no one could do anything, Luka was able to just squeeze out little bits of offense here and there in the half court that were enough to push the Lakers over the edge. And that's the thing. Like, that's a formula that the Lakers can win with. Oh, super ugly. LeBron's off. Austin's off. We don't have this going. Rui's missing open threes. Luke's missing open threes. But we can defend, win a little bit on the margins, and Luka can carry us home with a couple of big plays in the half court. I just thought it was a super impressive win because it looked very different than the kinds of wins that the Lakers have had for the majority of this season.
Absolutely. And it's an important, you know, for the mark of a good team is the ability to win ugly, because sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to do that. The shots are simply not falling. It's not often that, in fact, probably won't happen again this season, that the Lakers' three best three-point shooters, Austin, Kennard, Rui, went 0 for 12 from behind the arc. You talk about how the Lakers got it done. You look at the fourth quarter. They won two very important battles in the fourth quarter of last night's game. They won the turnover battle 7-1. Seven turnovers for Houston. They've been a high turnover team for much of the season. Really, really turned the ball over a lot since the All-Star break. Some of that was Houston looked awful. They were throwing the ball all over the gym. Some of that was credit to the Lakers defense. But they also, against one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the NBA, a amazing, historic offensive rebounding team prior to the Steven Adams injury, but still a very good offensive rebounding team. The Lakers won the offensive rebounding battle in the fourth quarter as well, despite losing it for the game, but they won it in the fourth quarter 5-4. Those two things really helped carry them through. And then, Jason, to your point, Luka was able to score just enough.
Really quick basketball note on that too. It is, you know how they say you can't, it's difficult to defensive rebound against a zone? The reason why is because you're not matched up. Similarly, it's extremely difficult to defensive rebound when you're doubling, because you're in rotation off the ball. And so to your point, the Lakers winning the offensive rebounding battle down the stretch while doubling was really impressive.
Yeah, and again, it's reflective of the effort that they put in order to squeeze the Rockets there, get that win. Jovan, are you buying it? Where are you at now with this Lakers team here?
I'm buying it. I agree with everything Jason just said. I think going into, like, looking ahead to Wednesday's matchup, which is a huge game now that the season series is on the line. If the Lakers win, they go up 2.5 games ahead of the Rockets, plus win the season series and the tiebreaker. If they lose, it's now a half game and Houston gets the tiebreaker. I think in general, DA and Jackson both need to be better. Like, DA had an incredible final stretch of the, you know, JJ goes back to him again to close after a rough first three quarters or quiet first three quarters. He got outplayed by Clint Capella and the big Clint Capella bowl. Clint Capella was the best center on the floor for the first 44 minutes of this game. Then JJ goes back to DA. He gets 4 offensive rebounds and 6 of his 7 points down the stretch. Made some huge plays also defensively, being part of both the doubling and rotating and helping. So second game where he came up huge in crunch time. But, you know, Jackson, this was kind of a rough matchup for him, where with how much switching they do and just some of the physicality, like especially when he was matched up with Capella, Jackson, I thought was getting pushed around a little bit, just did not have a good game. And we've seen it against switching teams that can sort of negate Jackson's offensive value. I think Rui has to be better defensively and as a rebounder. There was one stretch there in the fourth where they had 3 offensive rebounds on a single possession, and Rui was directly involved in 2 of the 3, just losing that battle man to man. And we saw the clip with LeBron going off on him, with Amen Thompson just going, you know, just up muscling and out jumping him. Like, I think Rui has got to be better, especially if the Lakers are playing small ball. Like, then it's going to come down to Rui, LeBron, and Luka holding it down defensively on the defensive glass. So I think that's an area he needs to be better. I think the Lakers could do an even better job of spamming some of the attacks against Reed Shepard. They did a really good job of targeting him, but getting LeBron, Luka, Jake in the post against Reed Shepard and really targeting him. And then I also think they got to be better. And they got better with it with the trapping, but I assume we'll see if there's a counter from Ime Udoka and the Rockets offense. Maybe not. Maybe the Lakers could get away with the exact same game plan. They did it for basically the entire half. But some of the stuff in the middle of the floor, right, where KD and Jabari Smith Jr. were able to walk into pretty easy, sometimes even uncontested mid-range jumpers that were like layups for those guys. And also some of the back cuts, Lakers were fell asleep sometimes off of the ball along the baseline. But I mean, yeah, this group is, to Jason's point, over the stretch of 10 games, they're top 3 offense, top 6 defense. Post All-Star break, they're 5th in offense, 12th in defense. I think that's more realistic and sustainable. But if this team is a top 5 offense and they're hanging around top 10 defense, or at least like top 15, that's where this is a group that can win a first round series and have a competitive second round series. And then depending on who they're matched up with, like, who knows how far they can go. So like, that's the recipe for success for me is like, they're hitting it now, right? They're winning the big 3 minutes. They're winning the starter minutes. The starters are +7 post All-Star break net rating. Like, everything is going in the right direction. Guys are shooting well. You look at the win streak. They have 6 guys shooting 38% or better. Just a lot to like recently.
Yeah, this is exactly when you want to be hitting your stride too. You're going to be securing playoff positioning and you're getting ready for that postseason, which is absolutely massive. Love what we're seeing out of this team right now. We're going to get a little more in-depth into that in just a moment. We'll talk about the Rockets rematch coming up tomorrow. What's on the line? There's a lot going on in that game. First, we're going to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Shopify. We'll be right back in 1 minute.
Starting something new isn't just hard, it's terrifying. There's always that moment before launching something where you're thinking, is this actually going to work? Whether it's starting a business, launching a product, or building something online, there are a lot of moving parts. And having the right tools behind the scenes can make a huge difference. That's where Shopify comes in. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand. It's also packed with helpful AI tools that can write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography. And Shopify helps you get the word out with email and social media campaigns so you can reach customers wherever they're scrolling. Plus, everything you need, inventory, payments, analytics, and more is all in one place. So it's time to turn those what ifs into cha-ching with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/LakersPod. Again, that's shopify.com/LakersPod.
All right, and get a big
can I pin this comment real quick. I agree, TK Baller. I could listen to Jovan Reed ads all day.
Up, your mic's muted there, Jovan.
You're muted, Jovan.
I've been told I put people to sleep, so I guess I take the compliment.
we're gonna create a channel where it's just you talking. We're gonna put it on loop. It's going to be a 24-hour. People will tune into that. They'll put it on when they're going to bed at night. It'll be fantastic. That'll get tons of views. All right, let's talk about tomorrow night's game. So tomorrow night, the Lakers take on the Rockets again. There is the tiebreaker on the line. Of course, playoff positioning, all of that incredibly important. Right now, the Lakers sitting in the 3 seed. But you look at how close things are in the Western Conference. Still, that 3-7 battle. It's the Lakers. It's the Rockets, the Denver Nuggets, the Wolves, and the Phoenix Suns. Right now, the Lakers sitting with, I usually look at the loss column first with these kind of matchups, 25 losses for the Lakers, 26 for the Rockets, 27 for the Nuggets and Wolves, and 29 for the Suns. Important that the Lakers now have a 4-game gap over Phoenix, because that's the one team they definitively do not have the tiebreaker over. The Suns will have that tiebreaker, but the Lakers with 4 games up right now on Phoenix. The Lakers would have the tiebreaker over Houston, Denver, and Minnesota if they can get the win tomorrow night, in addition to just adding more separation there for the 3 seed. Jason, when we're looking at this, especially this is the first game of a back-to-back, second game of the back-to-back is the next night in Miami. What should the approach for the Lakers be to this game? Is it just do everything you can to win this game and worry about tomorrow? Should they enhance their rotations a little bit? Should we see some Jared Vanderbilt minutes or anything like that? How should JJ Redick approach this game?
First of all, you pour everything you have into this game. The reason why is because if you win this game, you effectively have a 3-game lead over the entire middle tier of the Western Conference, which is huge considering certain things like Denver, for example, has a very easy tail end of the season schedule. They do have a Thunder Spurs set at the very end of the season, but it's at the end when when those two teams are probably not going to be playing their best players. So like getting that 3-game cushion is absolutely vital. Even in the context of like, if you were going to go 1-1, it'd be way better for you to beat Houston and lose to Miami than to beat Miami and lose to Houston for that very reason. I don't expect any sort of change in the rotation necessarily. Maybe obviously the center's in and out based on how they're scrapping, but like this, I expect the same guys to play. I think this game is going to be about understanding the increase in intensity that Houston is going to bring and cleaning up some of the mistakes that they had. So, for example, Houston, if they win tomorrow, they're in great shape because now they have the tiebreaker over the Lakers. It alleviates that loss from last night. They're effectively in the same spot in the standings with the tiebreaker at that point. So Houston needs to win tomorrow. So expect them to bring insane effort. As we've seen many times, the way that they will try to do that is massively uptick their defensive intensity and the level of effort that they've had on the offensive glass, which has done a lot of damage. So the Lakers did okay in the big picture. I think they only had 12 turnovers last night, but the turnovers they had were pretty loud, and it was pretty consistent stuff, like dribbling in with your back turned and not seeing Reed Sheppard coming. And Reed Sheppard's so funny because he's a terrible defender, but he's excellent at swoop-in steals. Like, it's just like a specific little thing that he's great at. Being aware of what's happening around you, some of the simple mistakes that they made in terms of turnovers that cost them, some of the scrapping, like, there were three or four battles they lost with Amen Thompson that they shouldn't have lost. Like, some of these rebounds, it's like, oh, Tari Eason's unguarded because we're double teaming and Tari Eason's shooting in like a cannon. Like, there's not a whole lot you can do to beat Tari Eason to that ball. But like DeAndre Ayton going straight vertical and having Amen Thompson snatch the ball away from him, Rui Hachimura getting bullied on the ground by Amen Thompson, those are the kinds of things that they absolutely have to clean up there. This is going to be an extension of the conversation that we have as it pertains to are the Lakers are a contender. Austin and LeBron are going to have to do a little bit more damage against the switching. So there's going to have to be a little bit more offensive burst from those two particular guys. As far as the KD double teams go, to Jovan's point from earlier, it's not just the Lakers that have done this to them. This has been the story of their entire season, whether it's been Şengün, whether it's been, regardless of who's been out there, they've struggled with this dynamic. And it's a combination of several things. Kevin Durant struggles to handle double teams, and they have such a poor combination of shooting and playmaking talent on the floor that they struggle to convert 4-on-3s effectively. Now, KD had this funny quote after the game. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it was like, maybe I should just stand in the corner and set screens and stuff like that. Did you guys see that quote?
I did see that.
What's so funny is it's like, yeah, you should, KD, because this thing where you dribble the ball across half court and wait for the double come and then to turn it over half the time and to throw it to a guy that's going to turn it over the other half of the time, that's not working. And like having someone else initiate offense and having Kevin Durant play in the flow where the ball's coming back to him would be a much better option than him dribbling across the court into double teams. Now, that would be my next kind of angle here is like, if they come in and play the exact same way, whatever, business as usual, you repeat the game plan from last night. But if they do make that adjustment, you have to be prepared to guard some different actions than you were guarding in the second half last night. So just be prepared for a potential adjustment from Houston. Trim down on the turnovers a little bit more scrapping on the offensive glass, a little bit more juice against switches from LeBron and Austin. And then lastly, it'd be nice if Rui or Luke Kennard could hit a wide open three. That'd be nice too.
That would certainly be helpful. And to the folks in the chat that are saying, oh my gosh, everything, it's glasses half empty and all of it. No. Look, we're celebrating a 6-game win streak here, question. But going into tomorrow night's matchup, you got to remember, look, this was, while the Lakers won and they were up 10 with just a few seconds left, I think they won by, 8 was the final. But Houston had a lead midway through the fourth quarter. It wasn't like the Lakers just blew the doors off the Rockets and it was not close and they're just going to roll again tomorrow night. And even if it was, as a team, you still have to look at where can we get better? Not just, hey, we did all these things great and just celebrate these things. You also have to be able to look at what did you need to improve upon from that game? And that's what Jason is speaking to right now. What do the Lakers as a team need to look to that's going to get them in a better position tomorrow to pick up 2 wins in a row? It's not easy to beat the same team twice in a row in the NBA, and you got to be ready. They're going to make some adjustments. They're going to make some shifts, and the Lakers have to clean some stuff up on their end if they're really going to be playing their best basketball. Jovan, the big unknown right now as we are live here is Alperen Şengün. He was questionable for last night's game, did not play. I would imagine we'll probably see him questionable again for tomorrow night's game. If he plays, how much does that change the way the Lakers need to approach this game?
It certainly impacts things on both sides of the ball where I think offensively it's another guy that can operate out of the post, off the elbows, or as a roller and short role playmaker. also another guy to double and try to see how he handles that. From, you know, we've seen LA thinking about like their recent defense against Jokic and in that game in Denver where they forced him into 9 turnovers. I think you could see something, you know, potentially similar against Şengün and really test his passing and ability to make reads out of the double teams. But like, certainly I think Şengün helps them offensively and gives you another person to target defensively, where the lack of foot speed, lack of mobility, the ability, like I can envision wherever they're trying to hide Şengün, dragging that player into the action against Luka and then Luka picking on him defensively. Obviously their second best player and a really good offensive player, also a really good rebounder. So that'll just fortify that part of the game even more in their favor. But defensively, I think it gives you, because I think the advantage to not having Şengün last night was then they were able to go to some of these small groups where it's just switching 1 through 5 and you have all these, they have an army of wings, right? You have KD, Jabari Smith, Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, and then you could go Reed Shepard, you could go Josh Okogie. Like they have all this size and length and switchability. You put Şengün in there, or you put Capella in there, now all of a sudden you have a slower 6'10", 7-footer, whatever, who you can target defensively. And also Austin, I think, targeting and getting downhill and initiating the blunder or just creating for himself. So I think there's, if I'm Houston, I'd rather have Şengün than not have Şengün and just have to figure out the ways to hide him defensively. And like, it's a good problem to have. But certainly, I think if he plays in this game, you're going to see LA attack him defensively, and then you're also going to see them trap him, double him, depending on where he's operating out of. But it does make it a more interesting battle for sure, because it did feel it wasn't the full strength Houston group, and I would like to see what that looks like, because I think that would be more representative of what we'd see in a first round series.
The Lakers did struggle a bit on the glass, especially in the first three quarters of the game. Obviously, they flipped that in the fourth quarter, but they were getting beat on the offensive glass consistently, especially the long bounce rebounds that are those hustle plays. We talked a little bit earlier about Rui and him being a guy that needed to be more active in those areas. Şengün could potentially take that advantage that the Rockets have and take it to another level. Jason, what do you see there?
I think that when we're talking about the higher level teams in the league, specifically, like when you're talking about the progression from, like Jovan said earlier, losing a first round series and getting embarrassed like last year, to competing in a first round series, to winning a first round series, to winning a first round series and competing in a second round series, there's like levels as you go up. And I think the mistake making that we talked about in the last segment is the big one that stood out to me for like an easily fixable piece. Like, even take it back to the Denver game. The Lakers threw such an amazing punch in that game, and they were controlling things in the first half. And then in the second half, Denver increased their ball pressure, and the Lakers started struggling to just get the ball into their offense without turning it over and leading to these runouts that Denver was killing them. It was like a turnover issue, right? Like a bunch of mistakes pile up. And yeah, Austin saves the day and Luka hits a game winner, and we all remember it as this fond memory, but that could have gone south from the mistakes that were made. Similarly, we talked about yesterday, like there was a point where I think Houston in the early third quarter went up by 10, if I remember correctly. And part of that was the mistake making that they were dealing with. And so I think getting to the point where they trim more of that fat is a big step for them to get to the next level of being like a more competitive contender. Another way that I always frame that is like the margins are extremely small. When you get into the postseason, a 7-game series is designed for the best team to win because you win 4 times in 2 weeks. But how many times do we go back through history and it's like, oh man, like if Aaron Gordon doesn't hit that tip-in dunk against the Clippers, do the Clippers advance? You know, or like you go back to the, even just last year, the Lakers-Wolves game. It's like you lose 4-1, but what if they do pull out game 4 and they get 2 days off? And they go into game 5 feeling like they can win the series instead of down 3-1, do they actually end up pulling that series out, right? So like there's a level of like you have to accept that these errors can cost you, right? And then the second piece of it is like Houston's small ball group last night couldn't score, but there are a lot of small ball groups out there that can score. And while we've seen Luka and Austin torch drop coverage all day long, and while LeBron has shown a lot of utility as an off-ball player in drop coverage looks when the ball gets skipped to him, when they go switching, it's been a lot of like LeBron struggling to score in the post, Austin struggling to score in his one-on-ones. Luka's the only guy that can really get anything going. And if he can get enough going, then he can start drawing double teams and they can get back into their advantage basketball. But in order for the Lakers, I think, to have a level of resilience, like let's say you face Oklahoma City. So like, because do I think the Lakers can win a series against one of these three teams in the middle of the West? Absolutely. They've proven that now. Like, can they beat Denver in a series? Yes. Will they? I don't know. But can they? Yes. Can they beat Minnesota? Yes. Can they beat Houston? Yes. Can they beat San Antonio or Oklahoma City? That's a different level. And let's take Oklahoma City, for example. Let's say they go small. And it's Chet, no Isaiah Hartenstein. It's Dort or Caruso with Jalen Williams, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and A.J. Mitchell or something like that, some combination like that. They're switching, but they're also scoring effectively on the other end. Luka can't have the entirety of the offensive load as a switch beater. So getting Austin and LeBron to a point where they're more resilient against a switching scheme, I think is almost a prerequisite for the Lakers to actually have a puncher's chance to win the NBA title. Because I would even argue San Antonio could go to their version of a small ball look where Wemby's a center and they're switching everything. And it becomes a problem where they're unable to get some of the natural looks that Austin can generate against drop coverage. So trimming the fat and the mistakes. And then I really do need to see more out of LeBron and Austin as offensive players against a switching scheme for me to feel like really comfortable about saying like, oh yeah, this team, if they made the conference finals or if they made the finals, I wouldn't be completely stunned.
So that kind of naturally bleeds into our next conversation here, which is this team a contender now? A 6-0 run, some of this, you know, did they get a little fortunate against Denver at the end? Yes, I thought they also made some things happen. Jovan, where do you stand? Are the Lakers considered to be a true contender right now that they're the 3 seed in the West and they're playing their best basketball of the season?
Well, it depends who you ask, I would say. According to some of the prominent national shows, I would say that they're still not. I would say for me, they have elevated to fringe contender. I think to Jason's point, to me, OKC and San Antonio are probably, I mean, they've been the two best teams in the league in the regular season. I think OKC is the best team in the league, but you can make a strong case for San Antonio as high as number two. I've remained high on Denver, but they've just not been able to put it all together this season. They've not gotten healthy yet, and I still think there's some questions about their health down the stretch here. So I Denver is for me maybe like the team that's hardest to place within this entire conversation. But then in the East, you have Detroit and Boston, New York, Cleveland, et cetera. So I think they're somewhere in that mix of, like, if you asked me a couple of weeks ago, I probably would have had them 9th or 10th in overall pecking order of like championship equity. I think they've nudged up over a few teams, and you can make a case for them maybe 6th, but I still think there's a few teams I would put, at least a few teams I would put ahead of them. But if they continue the stretch here and they go 10-4 down the final 14 games of the season, they're going to be higher for me. Right now, are they going to jump OKC and San Antonio? Probably not. I don't really, even if they won out, I don't think I would necessarily put, like, I would give them a real shot to, like, maybe that San Antonio series at some point becomes more of a coin flip, 50-50. Okay, they can beat them, but they're not, there's almost nothing they could do, I think, over the final 14 games that would have me view them on that level. What it could do, though, is have that gap between them and the rest of the middle of the West be so notable that you're just like, yeah, they're going to be a heavy favorite in round one. So that's what I'm more so looking at. But I will note, I think there is a, I think we talked about this maybe a super chat like a few weeks ago or something, like what was the pathway to the Lakers making a conference finals? And I think it is starting to shape up here where if the Lakers can be the 3 seed in particular, and it's Minnesota or Houston in as their first round opponent in that 3-6, I think they could beat either one of those teams. And I would favor them over both currently. Denver to me is a much closer series. I think that probably goes seven, and then it's, you know, could be a coin flip. But then they play San Antonio round two, and I think they have a much better chance of beating San Antonio in round two than OKC. OKC remains the team that I don't think they match up well with. I think all of their strengths hit at a lot of the Lakers' weaknesses and shortcomings, even with their recent plays. So if they can avoid the OKC bracket and you'll get a favorable first round opponent, I think that there's a pathway there. Now, I would still favor San Antonio in round two, to be clear, but San Antonio is also unproven. They've yet to win a playoff series with this group. Most of their primary rotation is not even played in the playoffs. So we typically see young teams like that go through these at least a couple of years in the playoffs before they finally break through with the conference finals. Maybe Wemby is that special and that generational that it doesn't really matter, and his first postseason is going to be conference finals or finals. We'll see. But I think the Lakers have a much better chance of beating San Antonio than OKC, in my opinion. And if they get in that 3-6, I think there is that pathway to the conference finals.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think I have them as contender adjacent, fringe contender, wherever you want to put them. I don't think they're on the same tier as the top tier clubs right now. They have been playing very, very well. Eighth in the NBA in net rating since the All-Star break. I like the way they've taken their game to another level. I think on both ends of the floor, they're figuring some things out offensively, defensively. Some of it is scheme. Some of it is just the amount of hard work, hustle that they're putting in, which is always endearing to a fan base, watching the team outcompete their opponent. And that's something that I think we've seen enough times in the last couple of weeks here. But I've got them as not quite a true locked-in contender, but they're that team now where before we were saying they were first round exit, maybe second round at best. I think they have leveled up beyond that to where now you'd be kind of disappointed if they didn't make it out of the first round or give somebody a real run in the second round and have a real shot to advance to the West Finals. They're now the team that I'm looking at and saying, you know what? They're not the favorites to get out of the West. Certainly they're not. I don't think they'd be the favorites to advance out of even the second round. But they've got a shot. They've got a puncher's chance if they're playing this way. You get Luka. Luka can go off and have a few games by him on his own that he can win in a playoff series. You have a throwback game from LeBron at some point. Austin Reeves goes on. They are a dangerous team right now for anybody to face potentially in the second round. Of course, they got to get there first. We know what happened last year in the first round. But they're playing at a level right now where I'm not going to slot them among the very, very best and say, hey, they're now one of the championship favorites in the NBA. But I think if they're playing the way they are right now, they're a very dangerous team for anybody to have to deal with in round two in the West Finals, wherever that is. I do agree with you, too, that San Antonio is the preferred matchup. Doesn't mean the Lakers are the favorites. The Spurs would still be the favorites, but you'd rather deal with San Antonio in the second round. So if you can stay in the 3 seed, that's ideal. Stay on that side of the bracket and then wind up getting San Antonio. I think we're also, when we're looking at the standings, we've got a lot of Lakers fans saying, well, no, you want the Lakers to be the 4 seed, so then they get this team or that team or whatever. When we're looking at Minnesota, we're looking at Houston, Denver, right? It's all so compact right now. It's too early to start trying to figure out what spot is going to lead to what specific matchup, because there's so much mobility up and down in the conference right now, especially in that 3-7 mix. I'm not even counting Phoenix out from maybe trying to bump up out of that 7 seed. So too early to start trying to maneuver your way into a specific matchup anyway. But
I mean, that would be the dream, right? Like one of these teams collapses here down the stretch and Phoenix gets the 6, and then I know the Lakers lost the season series to them, but I think the Lakers, I'd probably pick them at like 5. Houston, you could talk me into. I don't play Phoenix and Minnesota or Denver.
It's our team struggles so much with physical ball pressure, like from bigger wings. Like the thing with Amen Thompson, like they're just Jabari Smith's a little too upright. Amen Thompson's a little too skinny. Like it's the Dylan Brooks, Ryan Dunn problem that freaks me out a little bit with Phoenix. Now, I don't think we'd lose to Phoenix. I think the Lakers would beat Phoenix, but I think that series would beat the heck out of them. I'm more just being facetious, but you guys get the point. Also, I feel compelled to say, like, when we're talking about how the Lakers are not like a real contender, they're contender adjacent, like there might be 3, maybe 4 in the entire league. It's like, yeah. it's OKC, Denver, San Antonio, Boston. And even then, like, Boston has a center rotation that's every bit as bad as the Lakers center rotation. And the Spurs are literally kids. So, like, there's even though we're talking about, like, to me, it used to be if you would have come on the show 2 months ago and looked at the top nine. So now we're including, you know, Cleveland, New York, Detroit, Minnesota, Houston, and like that group of six teams other than the top three that I just mentioned. We would have all said the Lakers are just definitively below those guys. Now there's now none of those teams I can say are definitively above the Lakers anymore. And so that really is the leap that they've taken. Like, I do want to try to, at least on my show, refine the contenders into some more refined tiers. But I most of the year I've been looking at it as two tiers, like legit top tier contenders and then the second tier teams, which are like flawed contenders that, like, if they catch good matchups and other teams get hurt, like, you wouldn't be shocked if they made the finals kind of thing. And, like, I think the Lakers have firmly entered that tier now. Now, where they land in that tier, to Jovan's point, like, are we going to be looking at this in mid-April and be like, oh, like, I feel pretty good that they're going to win their first round series. Whereas that we could be sitting there going like, oh, maybe, you know, like, there's a lot of ground to be gained just between those two destinations. But then there's like a whole other set of ground to cover to get to that third destination, which is, can you like go toe-to-toe with the Spurs? Can you go toe-to-toe with the Thunder? Can you go toe-to-toe with Denver or Boston? And so, yeah, like, I think when we're talking about them being contender adjacent, it's more just a conversation about how there really isn't a ton of those types of teams at the top of the league. There might be four, maybe.
Yeah. And look, the Lakers, they're playing wonderful basketball. They've been a lot more fun to watch over the last few weeks because there's not just the fact that they're getting the results, but the heart that they're playing with, the hustle they're playing with, like, these kinds of things certainly matter. I know fans are a lot more fired up right now about this team. I'm more optimistic about this team. I know all of you guys are as well. I think they can make a real run here if they keep playing the way that they have been now. And even if I think there are things they can do to even continue to improve and get to another level. And that's really exciting about this group. I think there's something certainly worth watching about this team, despite what some in the media may say about them. All right, let's get into our question, because we've got a bunch of other things we want to get to, but I think most of them are going to get addressed in our Q&A here. So let's get to that. First, we're going to give a last shout out to a sponsor here, and that is Factor. We'll be right back in 1 minute, and then we're getting to all of your questions and comments.
All right, quick break. And this one's actually something I've been using personally. Cold days, big games, busy schedule, no time to cook. That's why I've been rocking with Factor. I've been ordering their Protein Plus meals, especially the grilled chicken with roasted veggies. Perfect for me because I'm trying to keep my energy high for shows without feeling heavy after eating. What I like about Factor, quality ingredients, lean proteins, real veggies, whole food fats, no refined sugars, no artificial sweeteners, no refined seed oils, and it fits the schedule. They've got 100 rotating meals weekly, keto, calorie smart, Mediterranean, GLP-1 support, even a new Muscle Pro collection for strength and recovery. And the convenience is crazy. Always fresh, never frozen, ready in about 2 minutes, no prep, no stress. I use this, and you guys should too, especially if you're balancing work, school, gym, and Lakers games every night. Head to factormeals.com/LakersPod50off and use code LakersPod50off to get your 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for a year. That's 50% off and a free breakfast item in every box for a year while your subscription is still active.
All right. And again, big thank you to Factor for sponsoring the show. In fact, I think I'm going to have Factor for lunch after this. All right. Let's
I got to say, it's unfortunate the Oscars just passed because Jason should have been up for
that was
the best actor with that performance there.
just slanging food in the kitchen.
Well, and see, this is part of why. This is part of why. Lakers Collective is the best NBA analysis show around. Thanks to all three of you for staying as objective as possible in your analysis. Keep up the amazing work. It is all credit to Jason's incredible acting ability that takes the show to another level.
Glad I'm finally getting recognition for this side of what I bring to the table.
We appreciate the kind words there. All right, let's go here. Young West said, is last night a sign that in the playoffs, when the physicality turns up, that JJ won't be playing Vanderbilt? I know a lot of fans were very upset about Jared Vanderbilt not getting opportunities. I feel like he could have been used last night. Personally, I think JJ Redick has kind of shown his cards here regarding Jared Vanderbilt. When push comes to shove, Vando's not in the rotation. Johan, is that the way you see it? What do you think's happening here with Jared Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I've been talking about this on my show post Luke Kennard trade. If you looked at just the trends of the rotation, JJ cut the rotation down to 10 guys, and then Vando was clearly the 10th guy based on his minutes per game over that span. And I thought it was really revealing when Marcus was out and he only played 10 minutes in that game against Chicago. Like it was, if there was ever a game with Marcus being out to lean more into Vando's defensive strengths and energy and just all the things that he brings, that would have been a game. And he chose not to. So then he revealed after the Denver game that he wanted to approach that game like a playoff game in terms of the rotation and just like the game planning and all the things that went into it. And they went with 9 guys and Vando wasn't in the rotation. Now, second game, that was a must win for them against Houston to have a shot to win the season series and to start the road trip off right. He goes with 9 guys again, actually cuts the rotation down even more. Only one bench player played over 20 minutes, leaned more on the starters, and Vando's out of the rotation. So I think to me, the general hierarchy right now is you got the starters, you got Rui as the sixth man. I think Luke or Jackson is the seventh man, depending on the matchup. The other one is the eighth man. Jake is the ninth man. Vando is the 10th man out of the rotation. So I think there are certain matchups they could use Vando, but with some of maybe the offensive regression we've seen from him a little bit lately, JJ just has telegraphed like he thinks he's too much of an offensive liability to get on the floor in serious games. Now, maybe there's like, would not be surprised if he's dusted off in a playoff series at some point or in a particular game or matchup or whatnot. But against these like serious must win situations, he clearly does not fully trust him.
Jason, one of the questions that I've been getting a lot, and I've already spoken about it on my show quite a bit, so I'll throw it to you. Why is, if Jake LaRavia can no longer shoot the three, 7% from three in the month of March, hesitant to shoot it, has multiple games where he hasn't taken
7%?
Three. 7%.
Dude.
Yeah.
The last little stumbling drive at the end of the game last night was pretty brutal to watch. The Vos in mid-fourth.
Yeah, it's rough. So why then if LaRavia can't shoot the three right now? Yeah, 7.1% from three. In the month of March, he has made 1 3 in the entire month. Jason, why then does JJ not just say, well, if LaRavia is not shooting the three anyway, why not turn to Jared Vanderbilt and replace LaRavia with him? Why still Jake over Vando, even if LaRavia is not shooting the three?
So I actually think Jake's been playing pretty well all around. Like he keeps doing a ton of damage on the offensive glass. Like he's one of those guys that I think that JJ is almost making an investment there in the sense that like he's getting enough out of him defensively and on the glass to where if JJ does start hitting threes, it could actually pay a lot of dividends. Like I was actually talking about this on my show this morning. Like remember when we used to talk about how like there wasn't a single player on the team who could defend and shoot a three? Well, that's changed thanks to the rise of Marcus Smart. And Marcus Smart has become a very good defensive player that is shooting 40% from three for a couple months now. And even Austin Reeves has been defending super well. So like, it's kind of tilting in that direction. It's not like I didn't think that Jake was passing up open looks over that game against Houston. Like he just moved the ball and made the simple decisions when he would catch in space. I think that JJ's banking on, he has a higher offensive ceiling than a guy like Jared Vanderbilt, even though he hasn't actually necessarily shown it. And the most important part is the team is defending and they're getting stops. Like, I really do think that Vando had a lot of utility when the Lakers were in the dregs of the regular season and they weren't playing very hard. And all of a sudden, having a guy who could go out there like a banshee and just play super, super hard had a lot of value. Whereas now, the whole team is just in lockstep, like playing hard, really locked in, doing their jobs. And...
this super chat. I'm sorry.
Gabe Vincent's shooting like 29% from three in a Hawks jersey, by the way. Anyway, the we're in a phase of the season with the way the team is playing and how well they've been doing defensively. I don't necessarily think they need Vando right now the way that they did 2 months ago when they were kind of stuck in some of the morass of the season. This is a random detail, but I was thinking about it because we were discussing the rebounding piece, which Jared Vanderbilt is an excellent defensive rebounder. The Lakers' defensive rebounding numbers have been really bad, even during this 10-game stretch. I think they're 18th or something like that. They've been rebounding pretty poorly. But it's like there's a lot of context to dig into there. Because like we talked about, when you're double-teaming, you're not actually in matchups where it's easy to box out and to actually secure the defensive rebound. So what I think is really fascinating is the Lakers are not defensive rebounding super well, but they are forcing a lot of turnovers. They are getting out in transition off of those turnovers. And because they convert their second chance opportunities at such a high rate because they have such a good half-court offense, they're actually winning the second chance points battle despite the fact. Now, last night, notwithstanding, but the in the big picture in this run, they're winning the second chance points battle. So it's been kind of a fun trade-off from J.J. Redick where he's like, okay, we're leaning towards aggression on defense, which is costing us some offensive rebounds, but guys like Jake are offensive rebounding well enough, and we score so well in the half court off of our offensive rebounds that now we're winning the points off of turnovers battle, the fast break points battle, and the second chance points battle all at the same time, which I think is a formula that's working. But again, like, I think that JJ is getting what he needs out of Jake. What's working with the rotation now is working, and there is upside. Like, I wouldn't be stunned if Jake had a 20-point game before the end of the season. I would be stunned if Vando did. So, like, that's kind of the upside that I think that JJ is betting on.
Yeah, and I love that you shout out the offensive rebounds as well. No, go ahead, Jovan. I was just going to mention the offensive rebounds have been really critical for Jake. He's been making a lot of hustle plays like that, getting deflections, steals, those sorts of things.
I was just going to add that this reminds me of earlier in the season, JJ, remember he had the stretch when LeBron came back, Vando was iced out of the rotation and had the 8 straight DNP CDs. And one of the factors that JJ referenced was he was part of just some lineups that did not work. And he was sort of a casualty of the lineup data. And I think it's worth noting that coming out of the All-Star break, looking at the last 14 games, every rotation player has a positive on-court net rating except for DeAndre Ayton, who's barely a negative at minus 0.8, and Jared Vanderbilt at minus 12.6. So for whatever reason, they're actually they're defending terribly with him on the floor. They have a 132 defensive rating in the 111 minutes he's played. But for whatever reason, the Vando minutes have just not worked post-All-Star break, and he's been like, I guess, a casualty off of, like, I would not be surprised if we poked and prodded more with JJ on that, if that's what he says, because that was a big thing. Like, during that stretch before that, the Vando minutes had not been great, and that's why he pulled him partly from the rotation. I think it's a similar situation. And Jake, really quick, for the record, Jake is a plus 9, which is the fourth best mark on the team behind Jackson, Marcus, and Luka.
Yeah, which is important because he's had some rough on off numbers earlier in the season. This is actually a fascinating stat. So if you look at the last 11 games, the Lakers perimeter players, their offensive rebounds per 36. So the guys in the rotation, it's like LeBron 1.1, Rui 0.9, Austin Reeves 0.7, Marcus Smart 0.6, Luke Kennard 0.3, Luka 0.1, Jake LaRavia 4.1 rebounds per 36 minutes.
Oh, offensive. My goodness. That's just offensive?
Offensive rebounds per 36 minutes.
Wow.
In the last 11 games. So when Jake is out there, he is straight up getting the Lakers a bunch of extra possessions. Like, he's been killing it in that department.
Man. This comment here from our account. Hit that subscribe button. Everybody in here right now, if you haven't done so yet, double check right now. See if you're subscribed. If you're not, hit the subscribe button. Let's get to 16K subs here. Kind of just address this. Only fear is the Lakers can't rebound against the Rockets. They did enough on the glass in the fourth when they really had to turn it up. But that's where you really want to see Rui do. And I mean, we've been saying this since Rui became a Laker. We talked about Rui's rebounding. It's always leaving him wanting a little bit more, but he's got to do a little bit better job on the glass, particularly those long bounce, mid-range rebounds the Lakers struggle. I remember years ago, they used to always get crushed by Golden State on the long bounce rebounds off of missed threes. Golden State would own that free throw line area on the long bounces, and they'd be able to get a bunch of offensive boards that way. Saw that a bit last night against Houston as well. And that's not so much on the, you know, DeAndre Ayton, Jackson Hayes, even the LeBrons of the world. Even Luka does a really nice job as a defensive rebounder, but mostly down in the paint. It's on everybody else to make those hustle plays, to get those mid-range rebounds. That's the biggest thing I want to see. I know when we talk rebounds, we tend to focus on the paint, but really against Houston, I thought the biggest problem were the longer bounce ones where the Rockets were just beating the Lakers to the ball. I think they've got to totally do a better job there.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, let's go here. They've been shutting down opposing teams' stars. Yeah, I mean,
that's the doubles.
Like, right.
Yeah, that's our game plan.
And is that something that is sustainable, or will teams start to pick apart the 4-on-3 advantage they get when the double is passed out of?
I'm going to flip that question around on you. It's not whether or not it's sustainable. Is this roster's best pathway towards getting stops? Like, sitting back, it didn't work. So like, it just didn't. So now, could they do it better than they did? Sure. But like, I would argue, I put it this way on my show, like, when you play traditional defense, it puts an emphasis on your defensive personnel athletically. When you play aggressive defense, it puts an emphasis on your defensive IQ. The Lakers have been jumping the next read, jumping the 4-on-3 somewhere in the sequence. How many times did we see last night, and really just in general over the course of the last few weeks, the Lakers get the ball out of the star's hands, and then like that dude makes a read and Marcus Smart jumps it, or Luka jumps it, or Austin reads the skip pass from Kevin Durant and gets the steal, or LeBron jumps an interior pass. Like, this is a scheme that indexes towards an actual defensive strength of this team, which is Luka, Austin, LeBron, and Marcus in particular are very good at anticipating what the offense is going to do.
Absolutely. They've done a phenomenal job there getting those turnovers lately. One of the guys who's been really good at it, you mentioned Luka. The steals numbers are through the roof right now. Take a look at this. Mamadou said, I know NBA is a long shot. I think he means MVP. It's a long shot. But do you hear these analysts saying Luka won't make the All-NBA first team? And then this one, piggybacking, LeBron's missed 26 games, Reeves missed 21 games, Luka missed 12 games, and the Lakers are the 3 seed in the toughest conference. Why isn't Luka top 3 for MVP? His numbers are better than Shea. On that point, during this win streak, Luka Doncic is averaging 38 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, 2.2 steals, 1.2 blocks, shooting 49% from the field, 40% from 3, 82% from the free throw line. Jovan, why no love for Luka nationally, at least maybe not to the degree that we think there should be?
Well, I mean, we've had this conversation before, so I don't really want to relitigate it, but he's top 3 for me, and he'd be on my first team All-NBA. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, I think first team All-NBA is pretty straightforward, in my opinion, where it should be Luka, Shea, Jokic, Cade, and Wemby. I think those have been the 5 best players this season. I think those are, the 5 best eligible players this season, assuming they all make it to the 65 games. So that to me is the first team All-NBA. And then we could get into the next group with Ant and Donovan Mitchell and Jaylen Brown, et cetera. But I think those are the 5 guys who should be first team All-NBA and probably top 5 in MVP as well. But I have Luka on my first team and in my top 3 in MVP. So if you don't have him in your top 5 in MVP or your first team All-NBA, I think there's something, you're being disingenuous, in my opinion.
Agreed. Yeah, to your point, Jovan, like when we've even been critical of Luka this year, it hasn't been like, oh, he's the seventh best player in the world. It's been like, oh, this is what he's not doing that Shea is doing. This is what he's not doing that Jokic is doing or whatever. It's been very much like at the very upper echelons of the league that we've been nitpicky with him. But we talked about it last week. I think anywhere lower than like two or three in MVP, I'm just going to vehemently disagree with you.
Yeah, 100%. I'll tell you what, guys. It's a precarious position to be in, but I'm kind of liking Luka with no more technicals that he can pick up without being suspended.
Right?
He's been on his best behavior, and it's been wonderful.
It's more fun to watch that way, too. Did you guys hear Fran Fraschilla last night? He's like, Luka complains at the refs every single time. But what he's doing now is he complains, and then he stops, and then he runs back.
Yeah, I don't know. It's some of the point, like, people just play the hits of the hating hits and regurgitate the same things over and over again. And like the complaining is been basically, I mean, I don't want to say non-existent because there is an element, you know, that's just part of, like, he runs hot. But we see the best version of him when he's, we've talked about like towing that line similar to Draymond, where it's like that's the fuel that we see the best version of Luka. Like, I love when he's chirping with the opposing bench. I love when he's scoring, like, you know, offended by their coverage and is like, this is how you're going to guard me. Like that's the best version of Luka.
I'm serious. Once they get eliminated, the Lakers need to make sure that Modest Puzelis has courtside seats for every game, get him to say a few things to Luka here and there. And that is the path to Lakers success.
There has been a shift from like less complaining to the refs and more trash talking, which is that was what young Luka was like. He was just going at the dude who was guarding him rather than the ref. And it's been cool seeing him get more of that back.
And it's not no complaining. He definitely it's less. And I love that means he's getting back more defensively. I think he's been very locked in defensively, but he's been getting back more because he's not spending time talking to the official because he knows he can't without getting suspended. And that would be devastating, obviously, for the Lakers, especially during this stretch here. So I just like what we're seeing out of him lately. I know he's trying to be on his best behavior because he can't pick up another technical foul. But I do like that he is channeling that energy more into trash talk, things like that, than complaining, which also means he's getting back more on the defensive side of the ball because he can't stop and talk to the official like that. He's playing some amazing basketball. He may be playing the best basketball of anybody in the NBA during this stretch. And guys, it's one of those, at least a few times every game, I still find myself just shaking my head and just saying, my God, how is this guy a Laker? All right, everybody. We appreciate all of you. Super chats we did not get to, I will hang on to. I'll save those. I know I said I was going to get one over the weekend. I completely blew it and did not get the overflow super chat questions that we didn't get to put together. I will do one of those. Probably I'll do it tomorrow so we can react a little bit to the Rockets game from tomorrow night. Well, I guess I'll do it the next day. So it'll be Thursday. Anyway, we'll get one of those in for super chat questions. I'll make sure that those get addressed. Appreciate all of you who joined us. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Guys, great win streak here. Hopefully the Lakers keep it going. For next time, they'll be coming off second night of a back-to-back when we do our Friday show.
Yeah, this was a fun show. It was good to see you guys. Yeah, again, like, I'm not worried about whether or not they lose to Miami. If they beat Houston on Wednesday, they're just in really good shape for the rest of the way. And most importantly, guys, this would be so much more fun for us and so much more fun for all the listeners and so much more fun for all the Lakers fans if the Lakers actually tried really hard to find their ceiling this year. And they did. Actually, random side note, have you heard people that have been like, why didn't they make a trade? Why didn't they make the trade? It's been so interesting for me because I haven't felt that way at all, because like, if they wanted them to make a trade, they should have locked in earlier. If they would have shown this earlier, they would have made a trade. Like, so I don't really think of it too much in that regard. But anyway, it's been fun seeing them try to find their ceiling. It's been it's going to be a fun stretch run.
Yeah. Yeah. Jovan, final thoughts?
I'm just excited for Wednesday. That this is, I mean, each game is progressively higher stakes and just with fewer games left. It's like every game is going to matter a little bit more. But this is like, I don't know if it's a game 7 feel, but it's maybe like a game 5 feel in like a 2-2 series where it'd be great to go out and win that game on Wednesday. And then maybe you could even rest some guys on Thursday against Miami and exactly. be like, all right, we accomplished what we needed to start the road trip. We won the season series against Houston. We put ourselves in that position. Now I'm not saying like, I don't think they should punt any games here down the stretch. Yeah. I'm just saying like, if guys, like there's clearly an element I thought of attrition in that game where like Austin goes 0-for-8. He had several on threes, several short jumpers, right? And there's several air balls from the group. They looked tired coming off of that Denver game, which I thought was a great sign because that was like a war, right? And they actually went for it really hard. So I think there's naturally a little bit of guys working through some things physically right now that you also don't want to like overdo it going into the playoffs and make sure guys have the requisite stamina and health to win a playoff series at a minimum. But yeah, I think if I'm really excited for tomorrow, like this is the most excited I've been for. I mean, I was excited for the Denver game. I was excited for yesterday, but with the stakes of everything, like tomorrow to me is going to be a really fun game.
Absolutely. I can't wait for it. Excited to see what the Lakers can do. Tiebreaker on the line, positioning and the standings on the line. Big game tomorrow night against the Houston Rockets. Thank you again, everybody. Please make sure you do hit that subscribe button. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. Till Friday, everybody. See ya and stay safe.